Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast. I'm Christophe Malène, I'm your host. And today we're going back to the old format. It's just and the only, the man, Dave McKenzie with me. How are you?
Oh, I'm pretty good. We're missing Grace, eh? She's too busy.
She's too busy.
It would have been good if she just won the Worlds or just the Olympics, yeah, not
the
both.
Audacity of winning two in the same year. Come on.
Yeah, come on, Grace. She's off gallivanting
somewhere. Doing some stuff.
Anyway, another speaking engagement.
The key point is that she's not with us. So just you and I to debrief an incredible Giro. And I'm not mincing my word. I'm not being exuberant. This was nuts from start to finish, but then it got even nutter at the finish.
Yeah.
You commentated on most of it.
Yeah.
Where do we start, Micah? Where do we start?
Well, we start with on the 31st of May 2025. As a cycling fan, you'll remember what you were doing.
Yes.
You know, it's one of those, to me, honestly, in 20 years or almost 20 years of in broadcast and commentary and, you know, pretty much my whole life in cycling, I don't think I've seen anything as crazy as that.
Yeah.
In all different angles. It was just
on several levels.
On several levels, yeah. It's one of the most amazing stages. I think if for all you fans listening, you know, if you're watching on TV live that night, you're probably screaming at the TV.
So it was the one but last stage before the procession back to Rome. It was the Queen stage, allegedly. It was one of the hardest stages.
Yeah, it was one of. It turned out to be the hardest stage, actually.
And he was, he was won by Chris Harper, which is fantastic. Yeah. We'll talk about this on the second part of the podcast. We do an Aussie sort of a special quarter for that. But what happened on the stage? We had Del Toro leading the race. It was, I think it's 1 minute 21 on Simon Yates.
Yep. Or 1:30. And less on Carapaz. 40-something on Carapaz.
But then there was a game of chess played, climbing calls between Carapaz and Del Toro, and they were both ready to lose it to win it, but they lost it.
Yeah.
They lost it to lose it.
Yeah.
This is what happened.
It was...
What was in that psyche?
Well,
what was
to give a sort of brief summary, I guess... And I'll talk some key positives and negatives with it as well. So they hit the base of the Finestra. They're all there, all the GC guys. And
including Derek G, number four.
Yes, absolutely. EF drill it at the bottom, which I actually didn't expect, but I went, wow, good on them.
So four Carapaz.
Yeah, four Carapaz. They are absolutely lying it out. At the bottom of an 18-kilometre climb that is, you know, consistently... Pretty hard grade the whole way up.
And he's half gravel.
Yeah, half gravel, that's right. And so that tactic I loved. Yates is off the wheel. He's 50 metres off the wheel. Derek G is as well. No one could go. Del Toro crosses, takes his time, but crosses. And
actually,
I think
up to here, if I may say, up to here, he looks so mature. He never panicked.
Yeah,
never jumped out the
absolutely.
Saddle.
Absolutely.
He was so controlled.
Yes.
You could see some...
He looked like he'd learnt a lot in 3 weeks.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
From stage one to stage 20, it was like he'd learnt already. So that went on for a bit. Yates then gets across, effectively immediately attacks. They chase, but it's Carapaz who chases each and every time.
Yeah.
And by now, you can see that the tactic and the instructions to Del Toro is to not go off Carapaz's wheel no matter what. So he forces Carapaz to mark Yates. He does, but on the fourth occasion, Yates goes clear. They bring it back. Carapaz brings it back to 50 metres and swings off. And at that point, Del Toro will not close the gap.
So at that point, do you think this is where Del Toro lost the Giro? Because he could have, let's say, quite easily do this extra 50
metres. Well, that was the first point of where he lost it, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he could have started riding 4Ks later and maybe they would have minimised the margin. But you're right. At that point, that is where Del Toro, and to be fair, and we don't know this, but we're pretty confident we know, don't we, all of us, that to be fair, it's the decisions that have come from the car, from the UAE car, that made that call and told him under no circumstances
to ride.
Because
if you listen to the official interviews after, the whole UAE paradigm.
Yeah,
I don't know even have to put a word in this one, but the whole UAE rhetoric or speech, he didn't have the legs. He wasn't. Oh, they're happy with second.
Yeah,
he did have the leg.
Yeah,
he did have the legs. He sprinted at the finish.
Yeah, and that's right. And he might have exposed himself to Carapaz, and then he would have lost anyway. But he lost it anyway by almost 4 minutes in the end.
Yes.
So then, so what happens? They go across the top, and Yates, by the way, then in the process breaks the record. So we have to give Yates a lot of credit as well.
Under the hour.
First guy under the hour, and goes something like 4 minutes quicker than Chris Froome's time on the Finestra in 2018.
Well, we come back to this. Mind-boggling. He had a revenge on Finestra.
Yeah,
2018.
Yeah. He totally tamed it. But then down the other side, and this is what's interesting. And so to forget about Yates for a second, he's you know going full gas trying to win the bike race. Del Toro gaps Carapaz a few times, but he doesn't try and go for it.
Yes.
In other stages he would have. Carapaz rejoins. They hit the bottom. It plateaus out. Del Toro then looks over his shoulder and is like, well, do you want to work? And in the end, that is where Carapaz and the team had said, no, you've done everything you can. Do not work with him now.
And they smart were prepared from Carapaz, to throw it. Right? I don't know if it's smart.
I wouldn't say – I don't know if it was smart. But I understand at that point Carapaz has gone, no, you've given me nothing for a whole 18-kilometre climb while this guy's riding away from us. You're giving me nothing on the descent.
I'm not helping you to win.
And now I'm not helping you because I'm not going to drop you now up to the finish. Mm-hmm. So why should I help you just win the race?
Yeah.
So I fully understand. And if I was Carapaz's director at that point, I'm dropped into the car at that point, I'd probably say the same. I'd probably say, nah, stuff him. Don't work.
Yeah. So a couple of few points here, which come back to earlier on that stage. And we focus on that stage because it's the stage that basically won and lost it all. But there's a lot more in that Giro, and we'll try to go down the route as we go along in this podcast. But that stage, this last climb, at some point, Van Aert appeared. And Van Aert was at the front. So we, for the whole Giro, we were saying Van Aert is cooked. He should preserve energy for the Tour. He should be there for Vingegaard in the Tour. Blah, 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 blah. We were so wrong.
Because he just got better and better, didn't he?
Yeah, and then Van Aert is an architect of that win for Yates. Because on the flat, Yates didn't get an inch of wind.
Others
could not catch him.
And what was interesting, it was the perfect – Yates totally needed – Van Aert there, and it was a 10K pull maybe, give or take, 5 or 10K. It was like 2-3% most of the way, so it wasn't flat, and that, but 2-3%, you can make gains if you're chasing someone back.
Yeah.
As it turned out, they still cat and mouse. So Yates, without Van Aert, he still would have won, I think, but gee, it was an insurance policy, wasn't it? So it was a really good insurance policy that he had.
When Van Aert went onto the breakaway, there was no UAE at all in that breakaway.
No EF.
Yeah. Mistake or not? Someone like Mac Beauty or
hindsight. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. So we can say, yes, they should have. But then, absolutely they should have, because what they could have done is said to Del Toro, yep, you've got to, you know, the last third of the climb, Go full noise. Mm-hmm. Go full noise with Carapaz, or at least work with him. You've got McNulty or whoever across the top to help you down the other side. But they didn't have that, so they couldn't do it. So they totally made errors.
Yeah. UAE. So you're Tadej Pogacar. You're sitting in your lounger in Monaco.
Yeah.
You're watching this.
Yeah. Oh, you've thrown a few glasses.
Yeah. How many swear words a minute do you go? Because you can't be happy about this. This is not a nice display. This is not this is not the image he's making of that team.
No. It's interesting, isn't it? They'll be scrutinized, and they will be scrutinized in the first week of the Tour de France. And every time if Pog goes on a 40-kilometre attack, you know, he does this. And people are critical of that too, saying, you know, he races silly. Does he?
Yeah.
he won the world title. Van der Poel and Remco said when he attacked 100 kilometres to go, well, he's just thrown the world title.
Yeah.
And then he won it. So I will still maintain that he's only racing silly to everyone else, but he's still winning. So you can't say he's racing silly. Mm-hmm. He knows how good he is, Pog. I'm digressing a bit here.
But I'm sort of fueling the
discussion. You can see what the discussion is going to be from a lot of journalists and reporters at the Tour and the questioning, you know, in that first week of the race, they'll be asking more and more questions about the tactics.
You're Del Toro, okay? You could have won your first Grand Tour. There's probably not going to be that many Grand Tours you can win, just not because you're not good, because the team is stacked up.
Well, that was
one opportunity.
Well, as Gero said too, and, you know, you're right, but also to add to it, Gero said, you know, there's no guarantees.
No.
So there's no guarantees. You know, you see these guys that win 2, 3, 4, Froome, Vingegaard, Pog, Roglic, but there are no guarantees you win one. So mm-hmm. when you are so close to winning one, in 3, 4, 5 years, we don't know, but Del Toro could be really, he could be even more disappointed than what he is at the moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That he might be like, wow, I should have won that Giro. And he'll be a bit more mature. He'll understand tactically how to race better himself. He'll understand his body, and he might be looking back saying, "I was good enough that day."
So you go back 50 odd years. Riders didn't have anything in their ears during that ride. During the race, would that have been different? Someone like Del Toro from his guts.
Oh, you think so?
You could. I mean, we assume 100%. I think we're pretty safe in assuming that Del Toro had the legs.
He had some legs, didn't he?
He
marked Carapaz 4 times, so he was able to mark him every time.
He sprinted to the finish.
Yeah.
It's not like he was completely cooked. Yeah. So, yeah, you go back 50 years, no earpiece, no DS yelling and shouting in you. Totally, totally, Del Toro could have won this Giro. Did that make a difference?
100%. 100%. No race radios. Mm-hmm. You would think absolutely Del Toro would have worked. He would have done something. But it was a sliding door moment for Simon Yates, wasn't it? It was meant to be. This was meant to be, and it'll go down in 50 years. You know, I said it the other night in comms that you know, during the Giro, we had these little graphics come up, and the Giro, you know, the Hayes broadcaster Rai loved to celebrate all the Italians, you know, and, you know, so there's all these little snippets that come up from the older legends, Coppi, et cetera. You know, back in 1950, this happened on this stage and this happened here and this rider's from this town. So in 20, 30, 40 years' time, there'll be a graphic come up and they'll be racing over the Finestra and they'll say, in 2018, Englishman Simon Yates was leading and lost 35 minutes, but he made redemption, blah, blah, blah.
7 years after.
But you know what the difference is with that graphic? There'll be vision.
Yeah.
Because but that's just the way of life. 50 years ago, we don't have vision of Coppi. Mm-hmm. We don't have vision of these legends, Nincini, of this and that. But we will have vision of Simon Yates, and it will be replayed and replayed for the ages.
And it's funny you said this, because while the race was on, I was saying to our lovely executive producer, Kath, I was messaging her going, if you turn your in the Finestre, if you turn the color down on your TV, and all these images with the crowd and everything, it looked like it could be 1957.
Yeah.
You know, the crowd, it was like old-time. It was all-time legendary crowd. You could feel it.
And that whole crowd there, imagine, they will, in a year, in 5 years, they'll say, I was there that day.
Yeah, exactly.
It took me 8 hours to get to the top of the Finestra.
Except that kid, could you remember the photo of that kid jumping?
Yes. I mean, they're legendary images. Yeah. And I know, it was a crazy day.
100%. Okay, we take a short break, and when we come back, we talk about the winner, Simon Yates, and we talk about the Aussies as well in this Giro, how they perform. Don't go away. Welcome back to the SBS Cycling Podcast. I'm still with Dave McKenzie. Maka, we have talked about the controversy. We had talked about Del Toro and Carapaz, how they both lost that Giro. There is a winner, Simon Yates. 2 Grand Tours for Simon Yates on the mantelpiece. You think you are Adam Yates? You're looking at it going,
his God, brother. Is it his burning twin a bit? Brother.
Twin brother, different team, UAE. He's in the team that actually, inverted comma, lost that Giro. He made makes it, I guess, a bit sweeter for his twin brother.
I think behind closed doors, and I think the team get it. Adam, from all accounts, they're very close as brothers, which, you know, that isn't necessarily always the case in they're twins. But I imagine he would be so wrapped for Simon. You know, Adam finished on the podium at the Tour.
Yes, he did.
Simon hasn't. He's finished fourth. They've both won the young jersey, I think. But Simon's won 2 Grand Tours. I mean, this is, as he said himself in his own words, it's probably the defining moment in his career.
Pinnacle.
And the other thing to touch on, he spent his whole pro career with Jayco, or under the various names.
Yeah.
And he won the Vuelta
with
Jayco.
Or Michelton.
The same year was when he capitulated in the Giro. But the question is, would he have won the Giro with Jayco? And maybe not.
I'll say maybe not, my opinion, and not because of Jayco. It's because of the position in the team. He's not the leader at Visma. He was the leader at Jayco. That adds the pressure.
Yeah.
That probably would have brought him down in winning this Giro.
There's no Van Aert.
Yeah.
With respect to the team at Jayco, there's no Van Aert on that squad. And it's, I know, hindsight's, and it's easy to look and scrutinise, and but it is interesting that he's in his first year. And two days before, I'm not sure if you saw it, there was an interview with him post-stage, or the day before, and he said, I think some things, we need to look at that in the debrief.
He basically cracked the S at the team because he was not happy.
Yeah, so and he that, wasn't that happy was with something.
Yeah, there was salvation in this.
Yeah. So that will all be forgotten and washed away now. And I'm sure, you would think they would have a debrief over that.
Yeah.
And they probably already have. But I'm sure post they will say, are we good? You're happy? Do you understand what our reasoning was behind this? Or maybe it was a miscommunication with tactics on that actual stage that he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And, in some ways, we scrutinise everything so much these days, and probably too much. Of course, he's probably a bit annoyed because things didn't go the way they wanted to that day. He's only human. They're only human.
Mm-hmm.
I think sometimes...
And good on him.
Yeah, that's right. He spoke up a little bit. He wouldn't elaborate at the time. But,
Interesting with Visma and more largely, we talked about it with Grace in a previous pod. But when you think about it, there is some energy when you change a team. If you just take another example, Christophe Laporte came from Cofidis and reached Visma, and then all of a sudden he started winning stages, winning classics, winning different races. This is kind of the same. You went through several teams. Do you get a bounce of energy when you're in a new environment?
You do.
Grace was saying she thrives in change.
Yeah.
And changes.
Yeah. No, I believe so. It's interesting, isn't it? Human nature, we don't like change. Most humans don't like change.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We talk about people who stay in the same job for 15, 20 years. They travel on the same route to do whatever they do. They go to this cafe.
Weirdos.
Yeah. Most people don't like change.
I know.
You and I don't mind, seat of the pants sort
normal.
Of lifestyle. Yeah, we're not normal. We are totally not normal.
And you've seen nothing.
but the people who can change, thrive in it. Most people thrive in it.
Mm-hmm.
They don't like it initially, but if they let go, if they let their sort of wall down a bit, and so if you're at home and you're listening to this and you are one of those people you think that doesn't like change, not so much, most people don't realise they don't like change,
I think.
This is a bit of a psychological, psychoanalysis podcast now. But test it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most people will be surprised at how they can thrive, and it broadens their horizons a bit.
And if anything happen badly, you don't blame us.
Do not come to us. We are not registered psychologists. We are not,
We merely do it for ourselves.
Yes.
Just last question on Yates. Retirement or not? Do you think this is, if he says he's the pinnacle?
I haven't looked at his, I'll have a quick look while we chat.
Yeah.
What his contract is on with, I imagine it's a couple of years.
Yeah. When you win something like this, it sort of not bookends the story, but you won your first tour in 2018, the Vuelta, you're now doing the Giro. What else is there that drives you? Or is it time to, and it's been called actually, half as joking, half not. But I think it's Geraint Thomas that said, you win this, you need to retire on this.
So he's 32. He turns 33 this August.
Mm-hmm.
His contract is through to next year, end of next year. So he'll be 34. That could be it.
Yeah.
So maybe these last 2 years, the next 2 years, I should say, this year and next year will be his last.
So he would be a lot more relaxed through
imagine,
racing.
And imagine now, you would like to think... He will. I think it's on his schedule. We did talk about it during the race, actually. I believe both him and Adam, it's on their schedule to go to the Tour de France.
Yeah, okay.
So imagine Simon with Vingegaard, and imagine Vingegaard having Simon.
Yeah.
The positive energy that they've got now from winning the Giro. Simon, there is no pressure. The pressure he has is to just try and help Vingegaard. But he in the flatter stages, he can afford to lose time. He can afford to, so...
And win a stage here and there.
I don't know. I think it will be all for Vingegaard.
Okay.
If that eventuates in that scenario, but it won't be forced. But my point is, because they say, you know, it's not good to maybe do the Giro on the Tour if the big goal is the Tour. But he's not going to the Tour to win it.
Yeah.
He's going there to be a 2IC. And I would say not even a plan B.
Mm-hmm.
And Adam, you imagine, of course, will go for Pog. You know, but they're off the back of losing the Giro.
Yeah.
So the hype doesn't feel as good. Yeah, so it makes the Tour
even
more exciting.
We're not on commission to sell the Tour de France, by the way.
Yes.
It's just
well,
a
we
fantastic
sort of are, but...
but Del Toro at the Tour or not?
No.
Likely or not?
No, unlikely. He's young. Whether they line him up for the Vuelta as a support role, because the talk is Pog will do the Vuelta.
Yeah, yeah.
He
mm-hmm.
wants to win it this year.
Because they don't know how they work together as well, I guess.
No, that's right. That's right. Yeah, so that will be interesting how they manage Del mm-hmm. Toro's program for the rest of the season.
Okay, we are something like 20 minutes on and we haven't talked about the Aussies. We got to talk about the Aussies.
And we have... I think, can we go in reverse order? Reverse order of the stage wins, which means we have to talk about Chris Harper, because in all the commotion of that stage,
exactly.
Poor old Chris Harper, the win was incredible.
But it's not just you. Let's listen to him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what I'm happy about, winning the stage or seeing Yatesy win pink. He's an awesome guy, and I had the pleasure of riding with him for a couple seasons and doing a lot of racing with him. And I mean, I don't think anyone deserves the pink jersey more than him.
He's happy for himself, but he's happy for Yatesy as well. Like, this is what he says in the interview.
His victory is almost overshadowed.
Yeah,
it is. Let's face it. But what a win.
What a couple of days, because the day before, let's remember that he was in the lead in that breakaway and he cramped. He's physically cracked.
And I said to Gero during commentary, I said, it's an even more incredible win, because normally when you have a really shocker, and he didn't have a shocker, he made the break, but as you say, he cramped, you generally don't bounce back. Well, obviously you do sometimes, because he did,
mm-hmm.
but it's really hard to bounce back, especially at the end of a 3-week race. But he showed his mettle. He showed his mettle, because there was a 30 rider break. The quality of the guys in that move, Paulo Bilbao, okay, Wout's not a climber, but on his day he can. And there was a bunch of other good climbers. He dropped every single one of them.
And the way he tackled Finestra as well.
Oh.
Like when you saw this image on the drone on the side, and he was just riding away on his own, you go, he's
brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Solid, super solid.
Yeah, yeah. And
and you know him well. Mm. What a ripper of a guy. And
he's a quiet achiever.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a really quiet achiever. He's sort of...
But he's such a genuine...
Yeah. No, he's very focused and... You know, I don't know Chris super well, but he doesn't like to do too many interviews either. You know, and that's not a criticism. It's just the way he is. Mm-hmm. He's not that type of person.
I remember him the start of the Tour, maybe last year.
Mm.
We were at the Jacob buses and we were doing the interview.
He was great there.
And we were with Durbo and Chris, and they were both fantastic.
Yeah.
And remember you saying, this is Chris before the race.
But then the time trial, post-time trial, he wouldn't do an interview with
exactly.
him.
Exactly.
He didn't want to, which is sort of rare.
Mm-hmm.
Most guys post-TT, especially the Aussies, they'll do it because it's, you know, they finish the TT. It's not a road stage. And that day he wouldn't do it. And I was like, wow, you know, and I walked away thinking, come on, man, just give me a minute. But that's just his nature.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
And he'd obviously left it all out there that day.
Mm-hmm.
But no, his win, huge. And I said after too, to me, Jake Owalula's Tour wasn't a big success just with Plapp's victory, I felt.
Yeah, okay.
You know,
I was going to ask this,
20
actually.
To 30 million euro budget team per year. One stage win and nothing else. Mm-hmm. To me, that's not a flying passing with flying colours.
Mm-hmm.
That's good, but it's not flying. Not for them. They expect more out of themselves.
Okay.
But the second stage win from a guy who was meant to be their GC guy.
Yeah,
that to me made up for it.
And also, when you look at it, the romantic side of it is two guys that never won a Grand Tour stage. It's not someone that is, you know, bling or someone else that has several stages under the hood.
Absolutely.
Those guys are rookies at that level in terms of winning. Mm. You've been there as well. You know what a Giro stage does in your mindset.
Yeah.
And someone like Plappy, if you just now talk about Luke Plapp, he deserves this. And
well,
of course, but he worked for it.
Yeah, absolutely. And to be, you know, critical, because I can be critical because they've won. Plappy's no longer paid to win national titles.
Mm-hmm.
He's no longer paid to be this Australian summer sensation.
The king of January, you know, she called him.
I would imagine he's on a pretty good contract.
Mm-hmm.
Long term, they brought him across because now his future is now.
Yeah, from Ineos.
Yep. And so he's paid to win big races. So he really needed to win a stage. And we expected him to. You know, we all know how good Plappy is. And for Chris Harper, you know, this is, I think he's in a contract year, so his negotiations are happening now. This win comes at a good time, especially his GC didn't work out for him. So they're two really important wins for the guys individually and for the team who put investment in these two guys.
Absolutely. Can we see more of this at the Tour? Do you think it's the Tour is a whole different
game? Oh, I hope so.
And I've got criticism from people I'm close to that. They're saying, oh, you talk about is the Tour de France. Well, I'm sorry, it's the World Cup of cycling.
So It is.
I'm sorry, the Giro just finished. The Dauphiné is ahead of us. Yeah. The Tour is well ahead of us.
Yeah. Well, there's a fair bit of... And I always say it's the pressure they put on themselves. Mm-hmm. Ben O'Connor.
Yeah.
You know, he needs to deliver for them at the Tour, and that'll make their season, I think. And that's the reality. You're right. The Tour is the World Cup of cycling. Ben O'Connor runs podium at the Tour de France with two stage wins at the Giro. Their whole season is successful.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's how important... Mm-hmm. The Tour de France is now for Ben O'Connor and for the team.
Okay, let's to conclude on this podcast. There's a couple of points I want to talk about. First of all, fourth on the podium is Derek G.
Yep.
How good was Derek G for Canada, for Israel Tech?
Yep.
Performance so far. Like when we saw him go back to that Finestre stage, he kept on riding tempo and he kept on going up. And like mentally, that must have been
solid.
Hard.
Yeah, he's a solid. He's confirmed his general classification
disappointed
ability.
To be fourth, do you think, or not?
No, I think he knows.
Yeah, the fourth best leg.
I think he knows he was the fourth best bike rider.
Yeah.
And the third best was, you know, not a fair way ahead of him because he was close. But, you know, he was, I think post Finestra stage even, he talked about, you know, how empty he was.
Mm-hmm.
He's come into cycling, World Tour cycling fairly late.
Yeah.
When we look at the current generation, but that doesn't mean he's only got 1 or 2 years left. I think the next 3 or 4 years, 5 years potentially, are going to be his best. So Israel will be, you know, pretty excited about him.
Talking about Israel, there's someone that is retiring, is Simon Clark as well. So we should chapeau Simon Clark because he's always been very good with us as well in the podcast. Yep. He's always had time for us. He's and the hair. Like, we're going to miss that hair, that quiff that he's got.
But, yeah, it's one of the better ones, isn't it?
He's up there.
Yeah.
But what a guy. Like, you know him well for that matter as well.
Yeah, no, he's, yeah, what a career. What a career. And it was good he made the break on the last couple of days.
Yeah.
So I think for him, you know, there was a question about, oh, how will he feel? He hasn't sort of, we haven't seen much of him in this year's Giro. And, you know, and okay, he made the break on the last couple of days, which was great. But that doesn't matter because he'll be defined by his whole career.
Mm-hmm.
And his whole career is a stage win at the Tour de France, Maglia d'Oro at the Giro, a couple of stage wins at the Vuelta, including the King of the Mountains classification. Amongst his other results, a stage win, I think, was it in Team Time Trial with Orica. Yeah, what a career.
He was out of contract, then he got fished out again, and then had a second leap of life.
His story itself is... Yeah.
And,
you know,
and one of the Tour.
That'll be one of those graphics. Mm-hmm. That'll be one of those graphics when they race across the pavé at the Tour de France in 10, 20 years.
Yeah.
You know, on this day, Simon Clark, an Australian, won the stage after having no contract at the beginning of the season.
Exactly,
blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those great stories. So, no, chapeau, Clarky.
Yeah, absolutely. And then for the Giro, I want to talk about Peterson. Also, because Peterson and the Lidl Trek team, they won. If there was a team classification about grit.
How greedy do you want to be?
I don't know.
I mean, how greedy? You know, their domestique, who doesn't win anything ever, wins.
Yeah. And nicely as well.
Oh, that was a beautiful win. I almost teared up when I saw his wife and kids. That was beautiful.
Overall, what a fantastic Giro for Lidl Trek.
Well, they are. They're having a great year. And Peterson's he's having the best year of his career.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not forgetting, he's a former world champ.
Yep.
You know, and he's surpassing that season. He really is.
He had a classics.
And he didn't win the monument.
For? Yeah.
He won Gent-Wevelgem, but he didn't win one of the five yet. And he's not going to win Lombardia. It doesn't suit him.
Yeah.
But he was the one in between Pogge and Mathieu van der Poel at the monuments.
Yeah, yeah.
So he's beaten by two of the greatest in the sport at the moment.
He's a Chiclamino jersey at the Vuelta, which is not a mean feast.
At the Giro.
Yeah.
Plus, what'd you say, four stages, almost lost count.
Brilliant. Fantastic. Yeah. Okay.
You didn't mention Caden Groves.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I mean, we're just raining in stories and victories.
Of course. Yeah, sorry.
We mentioned Plappy with Happy. Caden, he's won before, so we've got used to it.
But Caden is interesting because there's also, he's putting his trust in this Alpecin team as well.
Yes.
And this Alpecin top is stacked up with Philipsen as a leader. Will we see Caden Groves at the Tour? That's my question.
Well, Kino said it. I didn't realise. Kino said, yes, he is down to do the Tour. Okay. He'll be there in a support role. But with that potentially comes opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, he will be the lead-out man for Philipsen. But, you know, there is the odd occasion where he might get his own chance. And Caden's...
Let's talk about just one second before. A lead-out man, but there's also Mathieu Van Der Poel as well. Look at that train. Van Der Poel, Caden Groves in front of Philipsen as well.
Who'll be the last guy? Because Van Der Poel did a pretty good job last year.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting. Mm-hmm. But Caden's versatile. You know, for a real bulky-looking purist sprinter, he climbs better than most of the sprinters. So he gets over those lower-level climbs. He can go in breakaways. You know, he's worth his money, absolutely. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I hope, and I'm sure they are, paying him decent money. And just a byline off that, and it's a bit biased, but for good reason, because he was really prominent. Jensen Plowright.
Yes.
Debut Grand Tour, finished it, and with flying colours, he's on his final year of his contract. He will get another team, Jensen Plowright. And if he doesn't, the world has gone mad.
Yeah.
I thought he had a fantastic Giro.
Absolutely. Before we talk about Sarah Gigante, I want to have a word with Sarah about Sarah Gigante going back to the peloton. Coach Peloton as well delivered some goodies for you. I think that was very nice.
Oh, that was so nice.
You got some goodies.
I came in late one night, Couch Peloton. You know who you are. And I was actually late and I couldn't bring my dinner. So I was staring down the barrel of... Your treats,
the instant,
two-minute noodles.
The two-minute noodles.
And I saw,
which are basically buy for you, by the way.
Yeah, no, thank you. And it is, you know, with many thanks. I'd heard rumour had filtered through that the salamis and cheeses had arrived. And I get there, Kuno's got it all laid out on the table, devouring it. And I was just like, oh, yes! So I just, you know, I gave the kidneys a good workout and the liver.
We've got the best fans.
We have got the best fans.
And when they deliver,
that is so sweet that you turn up here, deliver us, so much appreciated.
So, yeah, absolutely. Okay, let's talk about Sarah Gigante to conclude this podcast. She is back in Europe. She's back in the peloton.
She's doing well. No longer terrorizing commuters on bike paths. Yes. Yes. No, good. And she was third on stage one of Tour of Norway. Uh-huh. Really great to see.
So less than a year after operation, how do you make the decision to go back? Is it too early? Is it not too early? Like, how do you make that decision?
No, I think...
Or is it the quicker the better? The better it is?
No, I wouldn't say the quicker the better, or the decision would have been made with doctors and everything, because, you know, the op that she had is, you know, fairly common, not uncommon in cycling, but still fairly serious. So you have to take the appropriate time. She's obviously was ready to go, and she's obviously had some good base training here, and she's got herself race ready. So to finish third on a little summit finish, her teammate won the stage, and then she did a bulk of work on stage two.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good integration back into the peloton for her.
So the next, I think, is the Giro for the woman. There's the Giro before the Tour. Would she be ready for that?
I'm not sure if it's on her program. I think the whole idea is that as long as she tracks in the right direction, she will be at the Tour de France. So I think that's the whole plan.
Mm-hmm.
But she's just got to keep tracking in the right direction, which she should. And I said back in, January or because she had the op and then had to skip all of January racing. Yep. This could be a blessing in disguise for July or August, that is, for the women's Tour de France.
So watch this space.
Yeah, watch this space. But she's got off to a good start.
We know you listen to this on your training ride, and allegedly they're more than 30 minutes, you're right, so you're probably still listening to this, but thank you for all the support you give us, but we are so pleased that Sarah is back. And then one last good news on cycling: Annemiek van Vleuten on their social network announced she's pregnant. She's waiting, expecting a baby in January. In September.
Yeah. Congratulations.
That's a good way to end this podcast, I think.
Yeah, and for someone who, you know,
she was so dedicated,
the
to
best
cycling
in the world, and so dedicated, and she looks like she is just integrated into retirement so easily, and it's a really hard thing to do when you're at the very top of the sport. She obviously was so content with her career, and we saw her at the tour last year.
Yeah, I was going to say, and I just to acquiesce on what you're saying, when I interviewed her at the tour, I saw this image of her. She didn't want to sit down. She was like leaning in against some wall that pretty was a ruin, like it was a medieval ruin. But she was leaning, and we did a 20-minute interview. Mm. She was just so relaxed.
Yeah,
so,
she so seems content, really happy. Yeah,
content, happy.
Yeah,
talking about the world of cycling and where she was in her life and stuff. So when I saw the post, I thought, I send it to you, and I went, this is such a good news.
Yeah, yeah. No, congratulations to her and her partner. And well, who knows in 19, 20 years, there might be another superstar hitting the scene. Whether it be in the men's or the women's, we'll wait and see.
We're already scared.
Yeah, exactly. Be scared.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Thank you, Maka. We carry on until the Tour de France, you and I. And
absolutely.
Even though we leave, both of us leave actually quite early. But we are carrying on. This podcast doesn't stop until the Tour de France. So, Maka,
all the way.
We need to get the suitcases ready now.
Yes.
Pretty much for the tour. But Dauphiné is before that. This weekend.
Yes.
Absolutely. So,
Pog, Vingegaard,
Remco. Let's just finish on it. Rehearsal for the tour.
Oh, it totally is, and it's mouthwatering.
Yeah,
absolutely. We'll get a good.
And guess what? It's all going to be on SBS.
Live and free.
Thank you, Maka.
Thank you.